Welcome to Be Customer Led, where we'll explore how leading experts in customer and employee experience are navigating organizations through their own journey to be customer led and the actions and behaviors employees and businesses exhibit to get there. And now, your host, Bill Stakos.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another week of Be Customer Led. Very excited to have our special guest on the show this week, Alan Pennington. Alan is, what can I say? Just he's like an absolute rock star in the CX and the EX space. The list is long, folks, so hang on one second and bear with us. So Alan is the deputy chairman at Sweet CX. He's a special advisor to companies globally across customer experience and employee experience. He's a top 25 global CX influencer, a top 25 global design thinker in 2020, which is an amazing designation. He's a founding member at the European Customer Experience Organization. And he's also he also has a new venture with Glue Group, which we're going to talk a little bit about towards the end of the show. So please stay tuned with us throughout the entire episode. So Alan, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
That's a real pleasure to be here, Bill. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Cool. So I'm always curious about people's stories, Alan, and you know how or where they got that customer bug that led them into the work that we all do every day. You go back as far as you like. My story goes back to about 6 years old. But when did you start to say, hey, there's something real here, and this is what I want to be doing professionally and dedicate my life to?
Wow. How long have you got? Mine goes to go back to 6 years old, not quite, but I think the first impact for me of how important experience can be on people's behaviours and what they do goes back to my first ever job was a part time job as a teller on a bank counter.
Yeah,
I had a head cashier at one end and I was at the other end. I was a very, very junior guy. On a Thursday, I think it was, we have what's called Pension Day in the UK. So everybody used to come in, and the old age people used to come in and cash their pensions. Yeah. And I engaged them in a conversation while I was doing my thing. And within about, I don't know, 3-4 weeks on that day, I'd have a queue of like 6, 7, 8 people. And the head cashier's got nobody. And she's kind of going, come over here. And they're going, no, we're good. And that's because I was talking to them. Yeah. And having a conversation. It was often the only time that these people got out of the house. And, you know, they may be widowed, they may be single, whatever. And so that just having a conversation made it really real for them rather than just a transaction of, you know, cashing a check. And for me, that was really, I really enjoyed it. My boss wasn't very happy, but there you go. I guess that was the start of it. And I then went into retail. And retail for me is, you know, one of the big reasons for going into retail was because I was close to customers. You know, I was working mm-hmm. in stores. Of course, the problem with it is as soon as you're any good, they drag you out of the store and put you in head office.
Yep.
So you're kind of now detached from the customer. But hey, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
And I continued that throughout my like corporate life, which I think stood me a good stead when I then really got into it when we set up the consulting business back in, I love saying this, the turn of the century.
You're not that old, by the way, but anyway, you know, but you started early in your career, though.
And I think I've always been passionate about the impact that actually treating customers right can have, and you can convert that into the bottom line of your business. You know, it's a real, real differentiator.
So I love the story. Well, one, it just makes it, it just says a lot about your parents. They raised you right, that you're actually having conversations and doing the work right. So many people forget about the fact if you are in a service line delivery role, part of that is engaging with your customers. It's not just how many transactions you can do. So much of that is lost today. Tell me a little bit about your view on the evolution of customer experience. I've been doing the work for, you know, plus 20 years. You've been in it for plus 20 years. Hmm. How has that changed for you? And with a particular, because I feel like the last 5 years in particular have really ramped up in a lot of different ways, tech, AI, machine learning, et cetera. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts on that evolution.
Yeah, I'm certainly with you that it's changed quite a lot in the last 5 years. I go back almost to 2008 when the crash happened. And I think lots of businesses took lots of drastic actions at that time, and you know, had little choice but to do so. And I think it brought into sharper focus for the more leading ones. Actually, this is about holding on to our customers at the moment, and how do we do that? And by the way, we haven't got much money either because we spent it all. And who do we get rid of in an organization? So I think suddenly the experience was into sharper focus as a differentiator, even back at that point. So what's that, 12, 13 years ago? And since then, there's been an increasing focus on it. And you know, we're seeing huge growth on the tech and data side, which I'll maybe touch on a little bit later. I'm certainly seeing that in my role at Suite CX, that the tech and data side is really taking hold now. Mm-hmm. And there's some amazing stuff going on. There's some stuff I really question in terms of need, but there's some, you know, some really stuff going on. And I think from an internal point of view, businesses are now, I think and I hope, waking up to the fact that they need to be able to do this stuff themselves.
Yeah,
that they're now seeing this increasingly as a core part of the business strategy, as opposed to just some kind of nice thing we'll do over here if we've got a bit of spare time and spare people. Mm. Now it's being seen as a key part of business strategy, and therefore people getting serious about it. So we're seeing, I think we'll increasingly see more capability being built inside organizations rather than my old role where we ran a consulting business, went in, did the work. And at that time, the premise was we transfer knowledge, and that was great. It will do that. And of course, reality was, as soon as you got in there, people were too busy. So they just go, can you just do it? Give us the results. Give us the outcomes. That'd be fantastic, right?
I see that a lot still.
Yeah, I totally get it. I understand why people feel that way. But of course, you're missing out on such a huge opportunity, because if you don't leave behind capability and skill in your business, you're just forever filling in an emptying pot, which is never a great business strategy. And it costs them money, which is good news for us. You know, we were making money out of doing this, but I never felt good about it. So I think there is a shift now towards educators, teachers. There's a big gap there at the moment, which is about what Glue's about. But the whole education piece, I think, is going to be increasingly important moving forward. Go on.
Yeah, no. I want to get to GlueStrike. So you worked with so many new CX leaders, new in their roles. Maybe they didn't even have CX backgrounds, frankly, right? But they were thrust into this role because the company needed to do it and set up the practice, as you said.
Yeah.
You know, if for listeners that are in that new role now, what do you think are those core tenets of CX from your perspective? What are those three or four things that you absolutely have to be doing from a new capability perspective?
I think I put it as well as to do, to think. And I think when you go into a new role as a CX director, VP, EVP, chief customer officer, there's still quite a gap in people's knowledge about who you are and what you're supposed to be doing inside the business. So there's kind of there's a bridging thing you've got to do fairly early on that allows people to understand what your role is in the business, right? And to really understand fairly early doors that CX isn't the panacea. You're not suddenly the great guru who's going to fix everybody's problems and the world's going to be fantastic as a result, right? CX, as it grows up, is a part of a business strategy, but in very, very few cases, is it the totality of that business strategy, right? So I think that's really important. The second point is that it's very tempting to dash off and start doing stuff, when it pays just to take a little bit of time to get some good foundations in place first, so that you're clear about where the business is today, what your priorities are, where you're going to have the biggest impact, and what you should get started with. So building those early foundations is really, really key as far as I'm concerned. And I think you've got to be willing to adapt. Adapt to changing circumstances. You know, look what's been happening in the world in the last year, right? So you've got to be willing to adapt and change and move with different people's agenda inside your organization. You can't. It's my fervent wish that anybody in a CX or EX senior role does not create a new silo in the organization. All right. I see this as a bridging thing. It's an umbrella that can fit across and bring people together and actually help to catalyze real working together across different functions. Mm-hmm. So if we create, heaven forbid, another silo in a business, then I think you're setting yourself up to fail. And that's, you know.
Yeah, I've been part of those teams where they're a little bit of a black box, and people are just kind of sitting there wondering, like, what are you guys doing? What are you fixing? What, you know, what's happening? That change management aspect of the work is so critical as well. That ongoing communication. You know, one of the biggest, I get this question a lot from listeners, but also just from people that I know in the industry. The ability to influence across an organization is so important in this role, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if you're a chief customer officer, now you've got a bigger megaphone and you're trying to influence very, very senior people who frankly may have completely different goals for themselves and their organizations relative to what you're trying to accomplish. What advice do you have on how to develop and grow those that style and ability to influence across the organization?
That's the kind of like million-dollar question, isn't it?
Because, yeah. That's why I've got you on, Alan.
It plays back to what you've just said, that you know, you've suddenly got this role and people are wondering, what is it I've got my... And yeah. I think one of the first things you need to be able to do is to think and walk in your customer's shoes. And in this case, the customers are your colleagues across the organization, right? So I'm yet to go into any organization, I think, where I've gone to anybody in a senior role and said, so you've got so much spare time in your hands. This is going to be easy, isn't it? Right. They're like, no. I mean, look, I've got 1,000 things to do. I can't even fit those in. And now you want me to do something different as well? I mean, get real. I mean, it's just not going to happen, right? So if you think about what the colleague is going through and then what you're asking them to do, then you start to help to shape how you can approach it. Okay. So that's the negative. All right. But yeah, but the positive is if you can show somebody that by impacting the experience, they will have a positive impact on A, how they operate today, B, how tired they are at the end of a working day, C, that they've actually got impact on their real time in year business targets that they've got, be they qualitative or quantitative, and see if you can show them all that and kind of say, do you know, it won't take much effort either. And in fact, you might have to stop doing some stuff that will give you a bit more space. Now we're telling a story that is completely different, right? It's a complete 360 from the view of what's expected. The expectation is more work, loads of stuff, extra stuff, can't do it, don't know how to do it. So if you can stop that thinking early doors and demonstrate, and this is the key, demonstrate to people that what you're saying is actually deliverable, then you're onto a winner, all right? And quite often it's, you know, it's fairly simple to do that. So that's the first point. Second point for me is that as well as being respectful of your colleagues' agendas, the way to get traction in an organization is not to focus on one or two individuals. Right? I'm sure you've seen it. I certainly have. You know, whenever something came up, you'd say, oh, well, so-and-so needs to be on it because they're great. Right? This one person or five people on every project.
That's right. Yeah. Right? Because they're all heroes. Great. Yeah. You can't use the same heroes in every.
It's impossible, right? It's impossible. But that's what we try and do. And then these people collapse under the weight and disappear or whatever. Yeah. So for me, you have to break customer experience down into little pieces, right? So it's not about saying, oh, right, we're going to get a huge program now. It's going to run for 2 years. It's going to have 600 people. For me, and the way I've seen it work most successfully is little and often, and engaging as many people in doing maybe one thing different, maybe how they answer the phone, right? So you change the way you answer the phone. It improves the experience when somebody calls in, and you've got 1,000 people doing that in a call center, and they're doing it 50 times a day. There's 50,000.
That's impacts, right. Yeah.
Right. And you've engaged 1,000 people, so you have 50,000 impacts. One person can't do that. One CX team of maybe, let's be generous, 5 or 6 people in an organization, a large organization, is never going to have that impact. So for me, you have to find ways to engage as many people across the functions as possible in doing little things that they can cope with that maybe take 5 or 10 minutes, or once they've learned it, they just do it. All right. So my approach to transformation in this field is not to scare the horses, not to get people thinking this is some big horrible thing, and break it down into little manageable pieces. I tend not to advise my clients, senior clients, to announce that they're even doing this stuff. It's almost better to do it below the radar so people don't become uncomfortable simply because it's a default reaction. Oh, something's new. I mean, you can. I have this lovely little story I tell about it. When I was in a business where the CEO came in and he was new and he was very ambitious. And I loved what he was trying to achieve. But the first thing he did was stood up and say, we're all going to be customers first in future. Right. And you could see people in the boardroom looking at each other saying, okay, who's responsible for that? It's clearly not me.
Nor do I want it, maybe.
No, right. And then you could kind of almost physically and metaphorically, as they left the meeting, you could almost hear the doors shutting and people hiding underneath their desks thinking, okay, if I stay low profile, this will go away. It won't be me. All right. So completely the wrong impact as far as the individuals in the room are concerned. And beyond that. So you've got to be almost stealthy, I think, in the way that you deliver this into the organization and build it up over a gradual period of time. And then the final one is, I think, if you get senior level support, and I think you really need to have that. If you can, and I've seen this done well, if you can put together a short-term sprint, you know, we're going to change how we do a particular thing in the organization, how we onboard people to a new customer. And you get the CEO to sponsor it. And it's seen as this is a really good place to be for your career. Hang on, these people are being handpicked by the CEO or the EVP, whatever, right? Then suddenly people are putting their hand up and going, me, I want to be on this one, please, boss. Right? So if and it's not one thing, it's a combination of these and a number of other things you can do that I think give you the best chance of success. So don't scare people, keep it sensible. Have some early wins, spread it across the organization. Don't create a huge program that scares the hell out of people. So there's lots of others, but
That's sage advice. I mean, you know, I was speaking with someone recently and they said 2021 is no, let's just get like CX transformation out of our lexicon.
Oh, yes,
right. Like please. everyone's like just over transformation, right? Just at this point. And I love what you said. Just, you know, don't scare the horses. It's just a great one. It's a, I love the saying, but it's a great way to kind of put it. Have you seen too much of that? Like CX being this, hey, we're gonna transform this organization. We're gonna dedicate five people. And to your point, the weight of the work and the effort just kind of weighs them down too much. And they're like, gosh, where do we start? Right? You know.
Well, I certainly have, and I've been on a crusade to ban the word transformation in CX and EX for as long as I can remember, because it's a horror show. Okay, I mean, just say the word and you conjure up this huge monstrous beast that's going to suck in resources and money and time and effort. And how many transformations I'm scratching my head or chin, thinking, how many have I seen be successful? Right, not very many. You try and change a large organization. If you look up the, here's a challenge for your listeners. Look up the definition of the word transformation, and you would never use it again in the context of an organization, right?
Now I've got to go Google that now.
And I'm like, ooh, no. Right? And it's the same for me, and to be controversial, it's the same with me about customer centricity.
Mm.
Okay, customer centricity was very big 2, 3, 4 years ago.
Right.
To me, it's another potential nightmare, right? Because very few organizations can actually generally be customer-centric in the purest form of the words, okay? Unless you're a greenfield site and you set that up as your total mission and goal. And therefore, people latch onto the phrase and then it becomes, okay, we're going to be a customer-centric business.
Yep.
But nobody tells you what that actually means or what that means, not at the senior strategic level, but when it comes to me on the front line or me in finance or me in the IT department fixing stuff, right?
Yep.
So customer centricity becomes this misnomer in my word. So for me, it's about the degree of customer centricity you require in your organization to be successful.
Yeah.
And it's only about dialing up the level of customer centricity as a part of the other components of your business strategy. You know, if you say we're all customer centric now, the sales guy's going, hang on a minute, I'm the most important people. I deliver the stuff. What are you talking about?
That's right.
The most important. Right? Yeah. Or the commercial guys going wherever, or the tech guys going, we've got a multi-billion platform group. Yeah. That's the most important. What are you talking about? So I think language, which is what I'm getting at, is really, really important in how you say things and what you claim and what people infer is meant by something. So transformation for me, no. You can evolve and you can evolve significantly over a period of time, but evolution is not revolution, and revolution is more associated with transformation to me. It's kind of like, we're going to be this big different thing. So it might sound like semantics, but to me, it absolutely isn't, because I think it's at the root of a lot of the problems. with CX and people's acceptance of it inside an organization today, that we use this kind of emotive language. It works if you're a large, massive, multinational consulting business who wants a five-year transformational program covering every aspect of the business. Well, good luck, right? Yeah. But most people aren't McKinsey's.
That is true. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the term customer centricity for the very reason that you said. I mean, well, then, you know, well, what happens to finance? What happens to HR? What happens to sales? Like, you know, do we all need to be now second fiddle, right? That's the premise of the show, and I always say you should be customer led, and that's, you know, one of the reasons why the title of the show is, you know, start with your customer, work back into the technology, the old sort of Steve Jobs kind of adage, right? Start with that need, you know, set up those foundational elements, understand those wants and needs, latent or otherwise, and then start to say, all right, I'm going to fall in love with the problem now and go fix the problem. So I'm totally on board with you. So you do a lot of work in the EX space. How are you seeing folks pulling together EX and employee experience and customer experience? Is that something that's still very nascent as you're seeing it? Or, you know, maybe do you have any sort of tips on how to start thinking about that? Or should even CX leaders even drive that maybe?
Well, a bunch of good questions. Yeah. I mean, with my friends at Glue Group, we actually ran a survey at the end of last year. We just about to publish the results on it. And one of the things I wanted to get to understand was, where's EX in the spectrum of the whole customer experience thing at the moment? So we pulled it out separately, and I can share the results with your listeners. It's fine. Cool. We can do it through you. But there's EX is seeing significant growth in Asia. So they're ahead of the game on that front. Europe lagging behind. North America, it's kind of in the middle somewhere. But for me, it's always been the kind of, you know, it's been the lonely child of the orphan almost of CX.
I totally agree.
Right? But it's the flip side of exactly the same coin, because if your people aren't engaged, as Richard Branson is constantly saying, if your people aren't engaged, because he has employee above customer. If my people are engaged, then they're going to give a great experience. That's an extreme view, maybe. But for me, employee experience is 10, 15 years behind where customer experience is in terms of time and effort put into it.
Yep.
Do I see it as part of a customer experience lead job? I'd say Pete, they'd struggle to do that today. If I was defining the chief customer officer's job, I'd have HR reporting into the chief customer officer, because I think it's that important that you hire the right people, you train them the right way, and you develop the right culture within the organization. And HR has a huge, huge part to play in that. So I'm at the moment working with a very senior leader in the HR world, actually, in the European market, looking at the whole end-to-end employee experience, which is absolutely fascinating. That it's in that space, it's being led by HR, but I think that's great.
Yeah, you know, okay.
And they understand the area, and I think it raises the profile of HR as well, because too often HR is seen as a functional part of the business, just pay and rations and making sure people are hired and fired right. But actually, there's a huge amount of knowledge inside HR teams, which is often underutilized. So EX, I think, employee experience, is a way of opening that up and actually exposing the true asset that HR, human resources, can be inside an organization. So at the moment, I'm having more traction working with the HR side than I am trying to get people who are in CX to widen their remit to embrace it. That's not to say people don't get it, but they struggle to get the agreement inside the organization to start playing around with the processes inside the employee side of things. That's the simple fact, as I've seen it so far. But it's
really, that's really interesting. So tell us a little bit about Glue Group and what you're trying to do there, and where are you in the process of formulating that work?
Yeah, so Glue Group is GLOO as opposed to GLUE, so it's Glue Group or oneword.com. It's a virtual business, but it can have physical context. And the idea behind it is that growth is at the heart of everything everyone's trying to achieve in business. Mm-hmm. And CX, EX, is a component of growth. It helps to drive growth, but it's not the only one. there are lots of others that we know also contribute. So we're bringing together experts in different verticals, if you like, but all with a common thread, which is about how does the business grow and continue to grow in today's world. So it's very much focused on education, which is the heart of what I kind of switched from the world of consulting these days. I do advisory work, but for me, it's about education. It's about building those capabilities and skills inside. And as a result of that, giving businesses, my clients, this is what I call the C word, which in this case means confidence. Okay. So confidence that you can actually engage with your customer experience and your employee experience is through knowledge and through experience. And you don't have to, as a leader, be the expert in this kind of stuff, but you do need to have a certain level of information and knowledge to enable you to be credible with your peers and with your organization. And at Glue Group, that's what we're trying to provide, that kind of thing, because amazingly, it's not out there. Go Google, whatever it is, CX education courses. You're not going to find much out there, for, apart from perhaps maybe CXPA, which is specifically practitioner-driven.
So
for me, it's really exciting because I'm getting to, and it's all done by video content and obviously documents that support it. But it's largely video driven. It's 10-minute segments, so you can really learn in bite-sized pieces when you want. It's done through podcasts as well, so it doesn't matter where you are. So the idea is to make content available when you need it, as opposed to a set piece. Because I've been on so many things where I come up from the. I went on a great course. It was called Finance for Non-Finance Managers. I worked in there on the corporate side. That was a thrilling course. But I got quite excited about, you know, what I'd learned. And, of course, you go back into the real world and you don't really use it. And then when you do come to use it, you kind of think, oh, what was that about? I can't remember.
That's right.
Now. Right? So this is much more about the way we consume content today, which is as and when we need it.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's available. I don't know how to do a journey map. Oh, I, you know what? I'll just pull that video down. Doom. There it is. I've given myself a refresher. Off I go. And there's a couple of templates to help. So
cool.
That's the thinking behind Glue Group. It's quite exciting. It's quite good fun. And I get to share my knowledge to hopefully a much wider audience.
And it's glogroup.com?
Yeah.
Very cool. And is it fully set up now? Like, is it are you now onboarding new customers and clients and
yeah, it's just it's opened its doors in January, so it's
congrats, it's
really, thank you, it's really new, and of course content will be built out over an extended period, but it's available now for people to start to access and to look at and hopefully to engage with.
That's awesome. So I want to talk about just technology generally. And we talked at the top of the podcast about just the proliferation of, you know, large customer experience management platforms. You have experience management platforms as well. I actually wrote a post a couple of days ago about the need for more integration across these two disciplines. And the way to do that is to expedite the technologies that are focused on these two disciplines. Where do you think where do you think that technology is going in your view?
I'll kind of talk part from a personal perception and part from my role as Deputy Chairman of Suite CX.
So at
Suite CX, we've been developing effectively enterprise level software for the last 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years in this space now, very, very much practitioner driven and led. Primarily around, it was originally around mapping and but now it's absolutely about, you know, integration. It's about data. It's about the kind of whole gamut of that. What I see it's very clearly happening is a major consolidation. So I think you're right. There have been distinct groups that have developed, be they in the analytics field, be they in the data collection side of things, be they in the mapping side of the world. And clients have been, certainly I know, clients have been a bit of a loss to work out which bit should we be buying, which bit should we be using. Or we've got Qualtrics to do this. And we've got who and how. And I think there's over the period of time, Forrester have done some great research and looked at the different components of an experience, you know, from orchestration through to analytics and so on and so forth. And the different roles that different pieces of that jigsaw play. So I think we're going to see increased consolidation. Personally, I would say this, wouldn't I? But I think if you don't have that journey mapping piece, that point which you can consolidate your resources, and actually give them in a viewable format to as many people as possible from a, almost as close to a single view as you can get, then what you end up with is a bit of a piecemeal approach, which is a bit of a problem. And from a data point of view, I think I always take the view less is more. So it's great to have data, great to have analytics, but if you can't connect that then into actions, then you have to question how much money you're spending and is it worth it?
Yeah.
So, and I think connecting the journey mapping piece, the orchestration, the campaign management with the data and the analytics makes absolute sense. But for quite a while, they've been running in parallel tracks.
Yeah.
And being able to bring those together for a client that do take the hard way. It's this classic customer effort, isn't it, at the end of the day for the client? There's a lot of effort from a client side to kind of unravel where they should be going and what they should be doing.
Yep.
And I think it's our job as the experts in the field to make that easier for people and take that effort out and give people very clear views on what they should do and how they should do it and how if they build the right foundation and start small and start by proving points of success through outcomes, but with the capability to scale to bigger and better and larger, that's the way to do it. So don't buy the Rolls Royce. Buy the Mini that you can then trade up to a Rolls Royce when you're successful.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And of course, the salespeople, great as they are, will try and sell you the Rolls Royce every time. And then you, at some point in time, somebody, and the problem is people then come back and question your investment and say, well, why did you buy that? What's the ROI on what you've just been doing over there eventually? And you're kind of like, right. So maybe we shouldn't be investing in this. And you've kind of killed it for the next 6, 9, 12, 15 months. Because people have lost confidence that actually this is a sensible route to take, particularly when you have a crisis like we've had over the last 12 months and slash and burn is everywhere on budgets. It becomes much, much more difficult. So technology has and data have a huge role to play, I think, in sharp focus on what's important and helping clients to really focus in on what's important for their business, for their clients, not for anybody else's. And to therefore create and redesign experiences that will better meet those needs to drive that bottom line. So, yeah, I mean, it is really important, and it's in our gift to help clients, and we don't do enough.
You know, I was actually speaking with someone just yesterday. They said they were working with a company. They had purchased one of the large customer experience management platforms out there. I won't mention the name, obviously, but they purchased this platform over a year ago, almost 18 months ago, and they purchased it and they haven't even turned it on.
Wow.
And they're like, what do we? So it was a check. I've done it, right? I'm new in the role. Check. I need this. And it's out there. So I've delivered on my goal, but it's not even on. No one even knows how to use it. So they were asking this person to come in, help us understand how to turn this on and activate it. It was a fascinating story, right? So there's the Rolls Royce story right there for you, you know, if there ever was one. Alan, last question for you. You're a busy guy. And I know you've got an afternoon ahead of you. Where do you go for inspiration? It's a question that I always ask myself. Where are those touch points for me for inspiration? There's so many different ones. These conversations in and of themselves are, but where do you go specifically for that?
Do you know, I have two passions in life now when it comes to the world of CX and EX. One is about education and helping people, which is kind of more historical. So that's using all of my information, knowledge, and learnings, which tend to be historical, to help people to avoid the same mistakes I've made over the years and many others. So that's one side of what I do. But then the other side is very much on redesign. Because for me, the past is the past, and as is even journey maps, as is, fine, okay, but they could just be a picture on a page, frankly.
Yeah, yeah.
So for me, what people really want is change. And for me, that's about how to think differently. And I suppose I'm quite lucky that I can think differently. And that's not being pejorative. It's just that reality is some people find it really hard to think differently. Mm-hmm. Whereas I find it relatively easy. All I need is a stimulus to do it. So for me, the stimulus is constantly watching what's happening in the world and thinking, how can that be brought into anything that any of my clients or potential could be doing, right? So I read one this morning, right, which was an uplifting one for me. It relates to one's favourite subject called the pandemic, right? but this is about vaccination. And the piece, what it was saying was somebody in the UK, had realized that by using a smaller bore syringe, they have a less of an air gap, so they can get an extra dose out of every vial of vaccine. So that means, translate that, that means you can get, for one of the jabs, it equates to 20% more vaccinations available from the same supply, right? Now, if it, that person wasn't wired that way and hadn't been thinking that way, they would have just carried on doing what they'd been told to do. Yeah. And that was it, right? So 20% is a massive number. You imagine, you think, oh, if I could do something in a business that would unlock 20%
more revenue, or right? 20% more efficiency, I mean, that's game changing.
Off the cost base. But and my mantra is always the same. What does this cost? How quick can we do it? Right? It's not costing them anything. It's probably cheaper to use a smaller syringe than a slightly bigger one anyway, right? When can you do it? Straight away, right? So costs you nothing. You can do it straight away. Does it have, in this case, a bottom line in terms of, you know, number of people you can vaccinate? Yes, it absolutely does. We can quantify it. It's 20%. Boom. Done. Move on. All right? So for me, thinking differently is about taking things from that I see around the world, news, wherever I am, when I'm traveling, whatever, and thinking, how could we do this differently? So I'm doing stuff on employee at the moment. And a little tip for your listeners, if you're trying to think differently, then look at it from the other end of the telescope. So I was talking about how you hire people, right? So people being hired around the world as we speak, there will be tens of thousands of people being interviewed as we speak, as people are listening, right? And they'll all be having exactly the same experience, the same one we've had for the last 70 years. Right, they're going to be sat there. Somebody's asking their questions. They're sweating. They're kind of under pressure. Wondering if they've got the job. Da, 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 right. Some people are brilliant at doing that because they're just natural born actors. Some people are terrible at it because they're just really quite introverted and don't like it, are uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So if you change the question around and say, we're looking for an outcome. The outcome is that every individual who's being interviewed has the chance to perform at their best. Then you think about what that means. And that means that they are not stressed and they're not anxious, let's say. So how do we then look at what we're doing today and we say, how do we take the stress and anxiety out of an interview situation in order to allow each candidate to perform their best so that we don't just get the one who can blag it the best, we can actually find the nugget of gold that was hidden under the sand, because actually, if we hadn't done this, we'd never have realized they were this good. So you then think about how you de-stress and remove the anxiety from interviews. Right? And then you go through a whole thing. Stop me if I'm boring you.
No, this is fascinating.
So I take that right back to the whole kind of where this begins. You know, you send in a CV. Well, you know,
yeah.
Well, what CV should I send in? Should I do it on coloured paper? Shall I do it on papyrus so it will stand out? Do I need to write a thing about me in the third person? Yeah. And all this kind of stuff, right? Yeah. There's a whole industry out there doing this. So why? I'm going, well, actually, what I'm going to do, I'm going to send you something to fill in. So you don't have to fill in a CV, right? Here's what I want to know about you. And do you know what? You can send a little video as well if you want. And then when you get an interview, we're going to contact you the day before. We're going to say, Alan, you're going to be interviewed by Bill. Okay, this is Bill. This is what he looks like, right? This is what he's done. This is what he likes. He's got this, right? So I feel I know you because you know me because you've researched me. Yep. You've been on my social media and everything. You've known my inside leg measurement, right? I don't know who you are. So if you can take the anxiety, and there's a whole bunch of builds on that you can put into play. So I'm actually going to tell you what the first four questions are going to be in your interview. No, right. Well, there's nothing to hide. We're not trying to trick you here.
Yeah.
So, you know, you prepare if you want, don't prepare if you don't want. That's up to you. But, you know, these are the first four questions that we're going to ask you, right? So you can start to rethink how this, and now I've deployed that in a couple of places, and it is amazing in terms of the impact it has. Even for unsuccessful candidates, they come back and you can say, well, how was it? Well, actually, it wasn't what I expected at all. And I quite enjoyed it. I didn't get the job, which is sad, but it was a good experience. Thanks. That helped. All right. So you think about my experience, my joy is taking everything that everyone takes for granted and then throwing it up in the air and saying, look at it from a different perspective.
Yeah.
Is this really how you want to do this? And from a cost perspective, you get the right candidate. You're not firing somebody 2 months later because they pretended to be something they're not. All right. You get a happy employee who's more productive. I could go on. terms of how you do it. Yeah. So that's what I draw my probably inspiration from.
And for little cost, yeah, I love that. And for little cost, probably at the company to say, here are the first four questions, because we already know what we're going to ask you anyway. So that's no cost. Maybe you did a little, you know, you pull together, like printed out a LinkedIn profile and said, here are the four people that are going to interview. So make sure you look at the profile and find a connection, perhaps even, right? So
yeah.
I love that idea.
So they passed my test.
Alan, this has been a great conversation. I truly appreciate you coming on the show. And it's wonderful to meet you as well, and have a wonderful and happy and prosperous 2021.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to do it, Bill. And if your listeners want to get in touch, I'm sure you'll publish stuff around it. But I'll be delighted to field any questions or calls as a result of this. It's been a great conversation, and thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah, no, while we've got you there, like what is the best way to get in touch? I mean, we'll put it in the show notes as well, but what's the best way to reach out to you?
I'm a person these days. I'm not a company. So you can just get me at Alan, Alan.Pennington, Pennington, at btconnect.com. It's a really old email address. So Alan.Pennington@btconnect.com, and you'll get through to me.
Cool. That's awesome. All right, everybody. Fantastic show.
We're out. Talk to you soon,
everyone.
Thanks
for listening to Be Customer Led with Bill Stakos. We are grateful to our audience for the gift of their time. Be sure to visit us at BeCustomerLed.com for more episodes. Leave us feedback on how we're doing or tell us what you want to hear more about. Until next time, we're out.